When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Positively Trek. I'm one of your hosts, Dan Gunther, and with me, of course, is the renowned Barry DeFord. Barry,
renowned.
How's it going? Renowned in this household, certainly.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that means a lot. Thank you very much. I'm doing okay. You may hear that I sound like I'm speaking through a wad of cotton, and that is because there is a wad of cotton right about here in my head. I managed to catch whatever's been going around despite all of the precautions that I try to take on a daily basis. You just can't stop the tsunami of sickness sometimes, can you?
Well, especially working in a public school, it's definitely, yeah.
But otherwise, I'm good, and I'm excited for today's episode. I think, could we say that this is a maybe somewhat low-key response episode to the last one?
I think so, yeah. I mean, Star Trek Section 31 has come out. It's been received well and otherwise by various corners of the internet. It is a movie that exists in the minds of some people. Basically, there's a lot of reviews out there, some positive and some very, very negative. And we just kind of wanted to, at this particular moment in the Star Trek universe, kind of respond to that, maybe not directly. And I loved your idea for this episode. I think this is a really neat idea. You came up with this. So why don't you kind of explain what we're going to be doing here?
Sure. And I want to preface this with, it almost certainly came originally from the minds of Dan and Bill from the Trek Geeks. So much love to them. they've been known to pan episodes and then turn around and try to say whatever they can that's nice. So I'm pretty sure somewhere in their back catalog, they have a let's say something nice about episodes we dislike. But we're different people and have different thoughts and opinions. So I wouldn't say that necessarily this is, I hope this doesn't be thought of as theft. They say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And Dan, you've got a massive catalog in your head. You are easily one of the most well-versed Star Trekian persons I know. And I also find myself looking back at episodes that maybe I've panned in the past. Given the fact, and maybe this is something of a knee-jerk reaction, we are a podcast that's literally called Positively Trek. So I think saying something nice about Star Trek is kind of the MO of this podcast. And if you're listening to us, that's probably why you're looking for what we have to say. So this is a on the bright side style look at maybe some episodes that we ourselves have never really liked very much. I have to say the reaction to Star Trek Section 31 was more vitriolic than I think it deserves credit for in a lot of cases, and this is my own personal opinion. I mean, Dan and I definitely came out saying, it's a good show, it's good, we enjoyed it, you know, we watched it twice, we watched it together, and I think we stand by that idea of, like, if you're going to watch Star Trek, watch it with a friend, talk about it, and you know what, even if you watch to hate watch, you know, I mean, in these episodes that we're going to be telling you about today, you may go and hate watch, but I would say watch it with a friend, get some snacks, you know, make an evening of it and have some fun, because it's all pretend. And if you are that personally offended by a TV show, get a hobby. Try knitting or building Star Trek models or something. So, yeah, I think just looking at the vast catalog of Star Trek, I have cooked up three here that I think two kind of go a little off the beaten path, and then one is maybe a celebrated hate watch. What about yourself, just to sort of preview things?
Yeah, I've come up with a few, but I think my list is a little bit, I don't know what is on your list, but from your description, I think mine might be a little bit more like a straight shot down the middle. These are not controversial opinions that the ones I've picked, I think most people, with a few exceptions, every episode and movie of Star Trek is someone's favorite. That's kind of a given. I don't know. There's a couple of these. I don't think they could be anybody's favorite, but we'll see. Maybe we'll get some feedback. But I think mine are pretty universally by Star Trek fans accepted to be not the best.
That's fair. And I think to put this straight, it would be interesting to be in a writer's room. And, you know, myself being an educator, I know that there are times that the lessons I make don't hit. And that's okay, because I have to come up with something, you know, or have to kind of rehash something every single day. And that can be difficult. So I don't want to necessarily give the writers a complete free pass on all these things, but it is fun watching actors have to act out some pretty half-baked ideas out there. So let's get into it. But before we start, how do you feel about the reaction to Section 31 in general? And is there any kind of final thoughts that you want to give on our last episode, just kind of as we go forward? I kind of gave a bit of a rant there, so I'm going to give you a chance to rant too.
Well, I think overall the reaction has been kind of what I expected in some ways, in that there are people who enjoyed it and really liked it and cheerleaded a little bit. And there are people who didn't like it and have well thought out and reasoned reasons why they don't like it. And for the most part, like, I can't argue with a lot of people's feelings about some of those things. I listened to, for example, Alex Perry's review of it on Weekly Trek. And he was very much found very little to like in it and pronounced it the worst Star Trek ever. Which in my mind, like, I wouldn't, it's kind of like that when a new episode of Star Trek comes out and I really like it, I really hesitate to say it's the best ever, because it has that recency bias, right? That new episode energy, to borrow like new relationship energy terminology. And I think the same goes for feeling that something is the worst thing. Now, I can't presume to speak for him or anything like that, so I take him at his word that this is the worst Star Trek. And I seriously can see all of his points and accept that that's how he feels, kind of thing. But some of the reaction out there is also what I expected, which is the hate brigade out there, right? And Alex Perry is not part of this. He cogently lays out his reasons and all of this sort of thing.
He's a smart guy.
He's a very smart guy. I really respect him. I love his opinion. I listened very carefully to his review and took a lot of it to heart. There's a lot of people out there that just, like, they almost get gleeful when something doesn't penetrate the zeitgeist as being good, right? Like, it's one more thing, like the calls for Alex Kurtzman to be fired and like all those people that kind of champion that sort of thing. It's almost just like, oh, they've put another arrow in their quiver of ammunition to use. And it's just like, like, it didn't matter how it did or how it was received. They would say the same things. They just feel a little bit more justified now to say those things. And those people, just ignore them. Like, they add nothing but noise, and it's easy to get distracted by them. So in a lot of ways, yeah, it followed the pattern of what I was expecting. But in some ways was a little bit more vitriolic than I was hoping it would be. One specific thing I wanted to address is, during the review, we both, and I also sung the praises of Sven Rygrock as Fuzz in that movie. And I stand by that. I enjoyed his performance. It was over the top. It was fun. However, it has come to my attention that several native inhabitants of Ireland did not appreciate his attempt at an accent and his performance there. And I have to respect that. I am not someone who's from Ireland, at least not you know, I have Irish background, but it's, you know, it's many generations removed. I haven't lived in Ireland. I don't speak the language. I don't speak English with the Irish accent or anything like that. So folks like Sean Ferrick out there, who had a big problem with Sven Rygrock and his use of that and how he portrayed it, I have to say I accept that. And I appreciate that perspective. Thank you for letting me know that maybe that wasn't the most respectful use of an accent ever. A slight amendment there, I guess, to my thoughts, or something more to think about for me while watching this.
So as a person also who has considerable Irish ancestry, I have a relative who died during, who was actually executed during the Troubles in 1916.
Wow.
I've stood in the place, actually, at Kilmainham Jail, where he was shot. And my grandmother, my dad's mother had still had the Irish lilt to her voice to some degree. Obviously, it faded over time as she got older. Very much Irish to the core. And I hope he never watches the original series with Scotty's fake Scottish accent. Or I guess for me, people do fake accents a lot. And I don't think Sven was necessarily going for authenticity, considering he was playing a microscopically sized alien in the body of a robot Vulcan. So if that's the hill you're going to die on, I guess I'm glad you're dead.
I don't know. There were certain things during the review that were brought up, like the character does show, like the first thing we see about him is that he imbibes alcohol quite heavily. And the other thing was, and you know, this is more of a silly thing, and I don't think it was intentional, but it's just like a little bit of weird whatever, is that, yeah, he drinks a lot and he has tens of thousands of children or something like that. And I was like, I don't think it was intentional, but I can see why someone might get a little offended.
I never made that connection. I'm not, I guess I obviously I was raised in Canada and stuff, but I have this sudden urge to push back and be like, so you're not going to let that one go. I mean, like, there are other things in Star Trek that have been completely uncouth and out of line and out of place. I hate to go back to Godwin's Law, but Code of Honor, right? There's something to get upset about. So I guess, sure, if you're angry about the accent and stuff like that, feel free. I felt Fuzz was more of a pirate than an Irishman, but we can agree to disagree, I suppose. Let's move into some of our episodes that we think maybe aren't our favorites, but we have dug deep and really tried to pull out any of the positives that that we can pull, hence the podcast's name. What would your first episode be? I'm very interested to know.
Okay, well, my first episode is quite literally what I think to be, with some exceptions for outliers for very egregious things. But dramatically and story-wise and all the things, the absolute worst episode of Star Trek ever. Ooh. Which is from the third season of Star Trek, the original series.
Oh my.
And the Children Shall Lead.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible episode.
Isn't it?
It's so bad. Okay. So this is one, and I think we should probably give just like a brief synopsis of episodes for people who don't maybe have the encyclopedic knowledge of episodes. So in this one, the Enterprise goes to this planet. There's a bunch of dead people. This outpost has been entirely wiped out. The only people left alive are these children, who they take back to the Enterprise to, you know, take back to their families that are still living. But it soon becomes apparent that they've brought this evil entity aboard as well, called the Gorgon, who the children summon with some sort of rhyme, and they try to take over the Enterprise. And it's the Gorgon is played by a lawyer named Melvin Belly, who was famous at the time. Terrible acting. It's just, the story's nonsensical. It's slow, it drags, it's just awful. So that's a lot of bad things I've said about this thing. So let me try and pull a good thing out of this episode.
and I'm glad this was actually on my list, but I decided to zig instead away from this one. So great minds do think alike, sir.
Okay, so the one good thing that I can pull out of this episode, and this might be damning with faint praise, to be honest, I might be subverting this whole idea. But at one point when Kirk is, the crew is digging the graves for these people on this outpost, they put up a little sign, a little banner, and it's a United Federation of Planets flag, which we've never seen. It's this red little flag with stars on the outside, and it says UFP in the middle. Interestingly, in the Star Trek series font, which is funny because that makes that, you know, canon now, I guess. But it's this cool little logo for the Federation that we've never seen before, and I don't think we've really seen since. And it's a neat little piece of design that I don't, you know, we see later the seal of the Federation used a lot, but this was a really unique symbol. And I think the first time we see any kind of signage for the Federation in Star Trek. And from a production design point of view and set design and all of that stuff, it's cool. It's really neat. I really like that.
I can appreciate that. And yes, I think that when you have that many kids on set, I do feel like it's going to be hard to manage, right? And that's kind of what I was thinking about this episode when I was considering using it, was that, you know, you're also dealing with season three, which does kind of get a little wackadoo in places and whatnot. And yeah, the lawyer, he's clearly not an actor. He's clearly reading cue cards. He's clearly not 100% there. And yeah, it is a bit of a slower watch. It's not one necessarily that I ever go back to myself. One nice thing I would say is Five Year Mission does a really good song. So that's usually where I usually go, is some of the more difficult original series episodes usually has a pretty good Five Year Mission song.
Nice. I like that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, Barry, what's first up on your list here?
Well, we're sticking with season three of Star Trek, the original series.
Ooh, okay. There's fertile ground there.
Oh boy, isn't it? Now, this one, I do think it gets a bit of a better legacy than Children Shall Lead. And this is kind of a bit of my hot take. We're talking season three, episode 10, Plato's Stepchildren, which I know it has the first interracial kiss. That is what really gets it. It's clout. But I just want to say, if you removed that component and just watched it on its merits, it's a difficult episode to watch. There's a lot of hammy acting. Kirk spends some time stop hitting himselfing, which I think is really funny. I actually think that his acting is somewhat akin to the over-the-top acting that we get from some of the more recent characters in the most recent movie. There is a totally whacked out premise of this alien race that originally was living on Earth during ancient Greece. They are now telekinetically superior. They have all of this power, but they don't have really good medicine, right? And so they need assistance from the Enterprise, and then hijinks ensue when they determine that Dr. McCoy needs to stay with them, and they start controlling people's bodies. And it's this one little man who is able to have the sort of the secret blood to not be affected by this telekinetic power and whatnot. So what I would say is it's very 1960s, right? I think this is kind of in lockstep with some of the movies at the time. Bill Shatner is wearing less than what Riker wears in his quarters for most of the time, in that tiny little red toga with the short skirt. I'm impressed there weren't any wardrobe malfunctions. I like how Spock is very decorated in his costume. He's almost pretty in places. and I just find, again, you know, the episode just has some uncouth moments, right? Right, like at the end when Alexander is going to head back for them, Kirk says he has a little surprise for Scotty, referring yes. to the dwarf. There's just a lot of cringy elements to this show. And I think maybe to some degree with the newer Trek, there might be some aspects of cringe that people get from some of the messaging. But I really want people to understand that this maybe cringy moralizing does actually exist in the DNA of Star Trek in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm getting into the nice stuff, right? First of all, yes, this has the first interracial kiss on television. I think it's really important that that stays true. When I got to meet Nichelle Nichols, we talked a lot about her presence in Star Trek, what she was there for. We never talked about the kiss, but I do think she was part of some massive groundbreaking in 60s popular culture, and she deserves recognition for really going out on a limb for that. And it makes her character extremely memorable and, like I said, groundbreaking. So there's that, obviously, and that's kind of usually what Plato's Stepchildren gets known for. It's a hard-to-watch episode in a lot of ways, but when you think about it, it really talks about the critique of absolute power. When people feel they have all of the power and everything, how do they act, right? It actually even kind of brings up, you know, what Plato said when he critiqued the concept of might makes right, right? I mean, I'm kind of getting into The Republic now, the book, but Plato refutes the concept of might makes right. And of course, that's sort of how the bad guy in it, how he sort of treats his power, right? As he has the might, so he'll make it right kind of thing. He can do what he wants. But Plato's response actually was a leader should see their people, the people they lead or the people they rule, like a physician sees his or her patients. And I think that's an important thing, right? That you work to heal, you work to fix, you work to solve, and at the very least, do no harm. and I think that's a great anti-absolute power critique. And there is a lot of bonk on the head anti-racism within it as well, right? Where I come from, your skin, your background, and all this sort of stuff doesn't... It's as the guys in Mission Log used to say, that bonk, bonk on the head kind of anti-racism. Despite all of the hammy acting, the wild and silly set pieces, crazy costuming, and somewhat insensitive ableism, this is an episode that I think should be watched for its ultimate message, right? And ultimately, we can like it for that, even though I do find it's a difficult episode to watch just for its storyline and some of its cringy elements. I think the messages stand true. So I don't know if you have any responses on that one as well.
Yeah, that moment, everybody thinks of the interracial kiss when they think of this episode. And for me, my favorite moment in this episode is absolutely, and you mentioned it, and I'm so glad you did, when Kirk is talking to Alexander.
Yeah.
And, you know, Alexander's complaining about how he and the landing party are throwbacks because they don't have the power, right? Kirk gets down on his level, and the stage directions were very clear, obviously. Like, he gets down on his level and looks him in the eye. And yeah, he says, where I come from, size, shape, or color makes no difference, and nobody has the power. You know, it's just a great moment, absolutely. Yeah. And ham-fisted, bonk you over the head, but you know, we need that, obviously, right? So
very much so, especially in this day and age. And I mean, a lack of nuance doesn't necessarily diminish the message. And maybe that's the thing we all kind of expect from our TV now, is this like sharp, nuanced take. But sometimes you just need it in your face, like a bat. and Plato's Stepchildren does a good job of that.
Yeah. So, plus, we get Spock singing Bitter Dregs, which was...
It's true. It's true in his fancy little green outfit.
Well, for my next one, again, just a straight shot down the middle. No one's, you know, there's very few that will argue this one. Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Oh boy.
Which, you know, in a lot of ways, I think is a bit of the whipping boy, the kind of kicked dog of the Star Trek universe sometimes. But my most recent rewatch, like, honestly, a lot of that is deserved. And like, a lot of times when I watch it, I kind of find, I'm like, okay, I can accept this. I can accept this. I'm going to watch this. And then I find something new about it that just really irks me. And the most recent rewatch of it was, I noticed that Kirk, whenever he's on screen, has to be doing something awesome. And when he's not on screen, everybody's talking about how awesome he is. And like, yeah, when you start watching it through that lens, it's, you can't ignore it. It's so annoying. But like I said, we're here to talk about good things. And there is a through line in this film that I really like and I really enjoy. And it's maybe kind of obvious, but that is ultimately the friendship between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Yeah.
When we see them, you know, camping in Yosemite, and the scenes, they're goofy, they're ridiculous, but I love them. I really enjoy them sitting around the campfire and Spock and McCoy sniping at each other, toasting marshmallows. Yeah. You know, McCoy, God, I liked him before he died. There's so many great little lines. And even the row, row, row your boat thing is great. Like, it's fun. I enjoy it. Towards the end of the movie, like, there's a bit of a fallout between Kirk and Spock, of course, over the treatment of Cybok over the course of the movie. And by the end, they're back together. And, you know, that scene on the Klingon bridge where Kirk goes to hug Spock and Spock says, "Please, Captain, not in front of the Klingons." and, you know, the whole thing at the end, which I'm going to introduce a little nit into that all the longtime Star Trek fans know, but I'm going to bring it up anyway, where, they're talking about, you know, Spock says, "I've lost a brother." And Kirk says, "I lost a brother once." And McCoy kind of looks at him confusedly. And Kirk says, "I was lucky to get him back." And he's obviously talking about Spock. Kirk had an actual brother that he lost in the original series.
Good Lord, didn't he ever? Yeah. And a son.
Yeah. I remember when I first watched that movie, I was like, oh, that's really good continuity. And then I realized what they're doing. I'm like, oh, okay, never mind. He just forgot about Sam. Cool.
Oh, no. Cool. I never thought about that. My goodness.
That said, the sentiment in that scene is really sweet and really nice. And I like that. But just that, had to introduce that last niggling little nit in there too, that I'm like, darn it.
Yeah. I think some of the, and I would consider it somewhat, swaggery performance by Bill Shatner, right? He's got his hands on the controls. And so, you know, though it is a bit of his love letter to Star Trek, it's very, you know, framed inwardly towards how great Captain Kirk is and whatnot. I think that that scene around the fire is the best. The campy little melon dispenser was really fun. Apparently, you can actually get that on eBay nowadays.
Yeah, I think it was something you had to. It was one of those sending in cereal box tops things.
Yeah, toy placement kind of nonsense, which is amusing nonetheless. I guess for me, whenever I think of that episode, I was going to say that movie, it is where Captain Kirk is climbing Yosemite there, and then Spock comes in. Yeah, like I don't even get it. He's literally just doing something awesome all the time. And when he's not around, people are like, "Where's Captain Kirk? He's so awesome." Right. So,
Like when they, the Klingon Claw is trying to attack the Enterprise and he realizes Kirk's on the shuttle, so switch target to the shuttle and go Sulu. And they fly into the shuttle bay and Chekhov orders warp and they warp away. And all that we're left with is the Klingons like, "Track their course." Ah! And then he looks at, you know, looks past the camera. He's like, "Oh, he's good."
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
It's funny because I just finished watching, and I think, and I want to maybe hint a possibility for a new episode between the two of us. One of my favorite episodes of Star Trek, the movie Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World. Mm-hmm. Where
Best Star Trek movie alongside Galaxy Quest.
100%. 100%. There's a point when the quartermaster marvels at Captain Jack Aubrey's ability to outsmart the French ship Acheron by using a decoy and then turning away and then coming around from behind. If you haven't seen this, I'm spoiling a 23-year-old movie, so I don't know what to tell you.
And a much older book, too.
Oh, considerably older book. But anyways... He turns to the I believe it was to the commander, and he says, you know, to throw them off and then come within, you know, range after 100 nautical miles, right up on their rear. That's seamanship. That's good seamanship, you know. And they're literally singing his praises. And every time Jack Aubrey says he's going to do something wild, they all look with shock, but then one of them like gets this little smirk, like, oh, I know what he's doing. Like, that's when it's been done well, and mm-hmm. I do feel like that's where Bill Shatner is trying to get to, but he never fully makes it. But you know what? I'll give him an F for effort for sure, and to know where he's trying to go with it is enough to potentially enjoy the movie. And I think you and I should definitely sit down and maybe not hate watch it, but watch it, you know, bumps and scars and all, we can maybe enjoy a rewatch of that one.
Figure out the anniversary of it and maybe do a do a Final Frontier watch. I do also want to call out specifically the McCoy scene with his father when he's reliving his pain.
Yeah,
that is just one of the best scenes ever in Star Trek, and it's one of these things that comes up a lot in Star Trek. I think sometimes the worst of Star Trek can have like the best bits of Star Trek. And that scene with McCoy and turning off his father's life support and them finding a cure a week later to what ailed him, right? And how much that affected him. It's just, DeForest Kelly is brilliant in that scene. It's just incredible.
He does a good job. I also like when Scotty knocks himself out. I know this ship like the back of my hand, and he just turns and hits himself. I'm just like, oh, that's, wow. That's good comedy. Thanks a lot, buddy.
The worst part of that is he doesn't even turn. Like, he's walking a few meters into it. And just like, I would have been, sorry, mini rant again. I know we're supposed to be saying nice things, but like, if I was the supporting cast on that movie, I would have been so mad at William Shatner for how he treated their characters.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, he makes a few of them look pretty oafish.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway, sorry to leave that on a sour note.
We say it with a smile on our face, everyone. We say it with a smile on our face.
Yeah, absolutely.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Positively Trek comes to you each week thanks to the efforts of our amazing Patreon members. If you'd like to help support the show, simply visit patreon.com/positivelytrek. Join at any level to get early access to ad-free episodes and exclusive content. For higher tiers, we offer shoutouts, associate producer credits, and more. We appreciate each and every one of our listeners. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Live long and prosper. So what have you got up next here?
We're going to The Next Generation.
Okay.
Season 1.
Oh, okay.
Episode 23, Skin of Evil.
Oh, all right.
Difficult episode in my personal opinion. I feel like the villain Armus is very blah. He's a tar-based swamp thing who has abandonment issues, I guess, more than anything. And he gives a character with a great deal of potential an ignominious end. And I think a lot of people really just think that, you know, this is not one of the most favorite. This is very kind of slow plotting. The set pieces are very boring, right? That constant kind of rocky outcropping with a beige background, right, is basically where most of this episode takes place, and then you're in a carpeted spaceship for the rest of it. This also has a lot of history behind it, right? We have Denise Crosby wanting out, and they really give her a crappy death, and it isn't much. There isn't a lot of heroics. It's just very matter of fact. Nothing really comes of it. Star Trek Dead, of course, is definitely still a thing. Denise does come back later as Sela, and even Tasha Yar comes back in Yesterday's Enterprise very briefly, but she actually remains dead, I think, and that's an interesting interesting point. I find the acting in this one's pretty clunky. Pat Stewart hasn't quite found the monologue of Picard yet, and so when he goes to talk to Armus, it's not one of his best arguments, and things kind of get left on a pretty sour note when they beam away and the energy field around Armus is dissipating and stuff like that. And yeah, I guess it is for nearing the end of the first season, I don't think this would have really inspired me with a lot of confidence. Now, it came out, in 1988? So I was 5 and not watching Star Trek yet, really. So I watched this later on and never really, I mean, I probably caught pieces of it in syndication and never really got the whole episode. But what I would say in the positive is if you don't really know the conditions that killed Tasha Yar, I feel like they handle her as a character who is mourned pretty well, right? Data spends a lot of time expressing his desire to be human by mourning, you know, his first love interest in a lot of ways. And she does come back in ways that, say, a crew would remember a lost comrade. So I think that this also opens the door for Michael Dorn's Worf to take center stage as the head security officer, which I think does wonders because Worf is easily one of the most important characters in Next Generation and onward Star Trek up to 2009 Trek, right? Michael Dorn really does do a lot. And then he even comes back, right, as well later on. So I think that though this episode really doesn't do a lot, it's not very compelling, it's not a very strong episode, it plants a lot of really good seeds that come to fruition into the entire series itself. Groundbreaking seeds, I would say, in a lot of ways that build a lot of characters, and you know, we can kind of see where a lot of those character personalities are going to go with this event. And I mean, Star Trek Dead, right? A lot of people die in Star Trek episodes and then come back, right? We just finished talking about Spock and whatnot. Yar doesn't. She's dead. That's it. You know, and aside from a few recastings and one alternate reality, she's gone for good, and that's it. So I think that's important. I think that's that makes the episode worth it, I guess.
Yeah, this is one that I have mixed feelings about for sure. Like you, I wasn't an avid watcher of Star Trek The Next Generation at the time it came out. I was pretty young. It's one that I watched in retrospect years later, after having heard Tasha Yar mentioned numerous times. And right, like, I think the first time I saw Denise Crosby on Star Trek was as Sela.
Yeah.
And learning that backstory and kind of unraveling that was interesting for sure. This is one that I have a little bit of a soapbox thing about, and I think I might have gotten this from maybe the author Christopher L. Bennett, maybe someone else. Someone made this point, and I really like this point, that Tasha Yar's death is heralded as the meaningless death, the pointless death, right? And this is something they drive home a lot when in Yesterday's Enterprise, for example, the alternate Tasha Yar learns about this. That's part of her motivation, was she wants her death to mean something. I see it a little bit differently, thanks to this having been pointed out, where, like, yes, it was capricious, it was horrible, she was snuffed out just like that, but she was killed in the act of trying to help her friends, trying to save her friends. And I think it bugs me a little bit when every time they mention it on The Next Generation, it's like, it's such a pointless death, just a pointless death. Mm-hmm. And I get the perspective there where they're saying, like, yeah, the act of killing her was evil, it was pointless and that sort of thing. But I never want to diminish her memory by saying, like, well, she was killed in the line of duty trying to protect her friends. And I think that's one of the most meaningful things someone can do in their life, right? So I always try to view it through that lens, which kind of helps it a little bit. The other thing that I really like about this episode, I love that you brought this episode up, the scene at the beginning between Yar and Worf,
yeah,
which is just this really cool, like, oh, we're going to work out in the gym later and I'm going to teach you some moves and all of this stuff. Denise Crosby has said in interviews that if there were more scenes like that leading up to this, like, she probably wouldn't have wanted to leave the show. So it's ironic that, you know, she finally gets to play some of this cool stuff right at the end. Right. So, yeah, it's an unfortunate episode. There's a lot that's just like, bleh, about it, but, yeah, there are definitely some things that shine in it, and I'm really glad you brought it up.
Yeah, they make lemonade in the end out of the whole thing, too. Denise gets to come back. I think she's a fundamental part of the Star Trek universe and always will be. And despite that she was unable to be in as much as I think we would have liked, I think her contributions speak for themselves.
Well, I'm going to do an episode here that's just one season later from Star Trek The Next Generation. Yeah. Star Trek The Next Generation season 2. The episode is Up the Long Ladder.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Not a great episode by any stretch. This is
speaking of insensitive accents.
It all ties together, you see. Yes, yes. Insensitive stereotypes, really kind of gross. Yeah, all that stuff. So this episode has to do with the Enterprise finding an old distress call from an old Earth colony or an old Earth ship, and discovering there's these two societies. One of them is a very, very stereotypical Irish, back to your roots, non-technological society. And one is a society of clones, because most of them were killed in the initial crash and they've cloned themselves. And it's a bit of a mess of an episode. It's kind of all over the place and weird. The good thing in it, and I really love this in this episode actually, is, again, just like the episode you were talking about, the opening scene or the beginning of the episode doesn't have much to do with the rest of the episode, but it's really good. And in this one, Worf passes out on the bridge and gets taken to sick bay and is embarrassed that he has like the Klingon version of the measles and has passed out. His Klingons do not faint, you know, all that sort of stuff. And Pulaski is very sensitive to this and, you know, keeps it a secret, as one should. It's a medical issue, all that sort of stuff. But there's this lovely bit later where Worf returns with gratitude and has her take part in this Klingon tea ceremony.
Yeah.
And it's just this lovely little scene where, you know, Pulaski, of course, cannot drink the tea because she's human and it would kill her. But she's like, yup, you know what? And grabs a hypospray and gives herself an antidote. And she's like, I want to take part in this, and sips the tea and says, now tell me some of that Klingon love poetry. And it's just this lovely little scene between them. Speaking of a character who I think is also a big part of Star Trek and deserves credit. And she came in in a very thankless role for an entire season of Star Trek The Next Generation, is not highly regarded by a lot of Star Trek fandom. I think Diana Muldaur did a great job with the character of Pulaski, and this scene is one of my favorite bits with her. And it's unfortunate it's in one of the worst episodes ever, because it's one of those ones where I was like, oh, this is the episode it's in. Oh, I've been looking for this scene.
There's nothing much I have to say that's good about this episode, except, yeah, now that I go back, and I also didn't remember where this came from. I think Pulaski is a bit more of a McCoy in a lot of ways. She's got that McCoy-esque-ness to her. I think she is a bit of an unsung character of Star Trek in a lot of ways. But yeah, I don't really have much else to say about the main plot. But yeah, subplot-wise, what an enjoyable little side quest that could have been made into maybe a bigger episode about pride and showing gratitude for people who do kind things for you and stuff like that. But yeah, other than that, that's a hard episode to watch, right?
Yeah, and it was a nice little turn for the Worf character as well. We see a little bit more of his humanity, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. We see a little bit of a softer side of Worf, I guess, which is something he would bristle at me saying, but we see a little bit more of a sensitive part of him, not just the like one note, you know, whip your phaser out and get beat up by the bad guy on the bridge kind of thing. You know, it's a little bit different thing for Michael Dorn to play. And he does it very well. He's a charmer in that scene.
Yes.
Very nice.
A stoic charmer, I would say.
Yes.
It is a warrior's drink. Well, we're not going too far again. You and I are definitely hovering around the more earlier, and I hate to say earlier because the next generation is very old now, but yeah, we're not touching any of the new stuff. Interestingly, we're sticking in TNG again. We never really escaped TOS and TNG era, or that kind of 60s to early 90s space. I'm going with season 7, episode 14, Sub Rosa.
I had a feeling this would make it onto one of our lists.
This is my down the middle. My goodness, it's fun how the Crushers keep it in the family with Ronan. heavens so to Murgatroyd.
Weird.
Oofta. I feel like this is a mixture between a cheesy romance novel in the Twilight Zone. And I do think Michael Dorn in an interview said something to that tune once, either at a convention or at an interview where he really did prod at this one a little bit. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, Beverly Crusher's grandmother has died, and she inherits this candle that, if lit, summons an alien who wants to have a romantic interlude with her. He kind of takes over her brain. Crusher wants to leave the Enterprise. Troy gets involved, kind of says, you know, we need to respect all this sort of stuff. And there's something of a Scooby-Doo side quest with Data and Geordi, where the body of Grandma is controlled by Ronan, and she Emperor Palpatine laser hands, lightning fingers them both. It's a toughie, because the scenes where Gates McFadden has to act pleasurably while being surrounded by the energies of a ghost, I really have to say that as an actor, Gates McFadden gave it her best. She tried her hardest and did what she could to sell what is otherwise an unsellable series of very cringy scenes. I have to say, this one's really hard to kind of pull together to say a lot that's nice, but maybe this is a cop-out, but I would say that to some degree, you could Mystery Science Theater 3000 this one a little bit and, you know, have some funny little quips in and amongst some of the clunky dialogue and cringy acting. Is it so bad it's good? Is my question.
Is it the Spock's brain of...
Yeah, right? It really is hard to say a lot that's good about it. I like the again, kind of Scooby-Doo side. It's actually science unmasking of it, that it's an alien, it's not a species. The candle is the energy plasma that gives him his power.
An anaphasic life form or something like
that. Yeah, yeah, anaphasic or whatever, which again, candle? A candle. Are you, like, it's the 24th century, why a candle? Okay, whatever. It's also really weird because then, like, Crusher was like, well, Ronan was basically manipulating my grandma and kind of messing with her brain and using her, but she was happy, you know, kind of at the end where it's just like, she was happy. Are you sure? Like, how can you really call that happy? It is sort of also a bit of a desecration of a corpse by reanimating her body and having it attack people with lightning fingers. But I really have to say again, you know, and despite some people saying, you know, the newer Trek is just, you know, kind of whacked out storytelling that doesn't make any sense and blah, 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 Go to the source material, folks. Trek takes risks, and the actors have to work with what they get in some cases. And not everything can be solid gold. And I mean, I think that TNG had a lot of chances to miss as well, just given the amount of episodes that they had in a series run. And I do think that for the most part, each episode is good. I had an honorable mention for Future Imperfect with Riker, and how at the end it just winds up being this weird little gray alien that wanted a companion, which I have to say, it's a great episode, and it ends in that simple kind of quick, fast, clunky way. So does Sub Rosa. But at least you can watch Future Imperfect up to the end and then be like, oh, okay, it's an episode of X-Files. Okay, whatever. Whereas in this case, it is just full on 60s camp in a 1994 romance novel skin. It's a hard one to watch, but I would like to watch it just for a laugh even. The actors did their best with the material they got, and the special effects around Gates McFadden. Oh boy. She writhing around there. It's real. She's a good dancer. We'll Data's Day, watch that one if you want to watch her dance, but yeah. Anyways, maybe my argument wasn't as strong for this one, but I really tried my best to say something nice, so I hope you can accept it.
Yeah, no, for sure. This is one that, yeah, it's not a great episode for sure. I would say that one of the things I appreciate about this episode is the legacy of it in Star Trek and the kind of, again, maybe a backhanded compliment, but the kind of fodder that it's given.
Yeah,
for jokes like online, Gates McFadden has fun with this. Like,
oh yeah,
like the whole Blazin' Bev meme stuff, combined with the ghost candle stuff and the memes, and the fact that she enjoys those memes, I think is hilarious. And then of course, you know, every once in a while you see that candle pop up in the background of Lower Decks or something. Yeah. You're like, oh. it's great. You know, it's. Embrace the silly, I think.
Yeah.
There are some like legitimately problematic things about this episode, as you've pointed out.
Yep.
but there's also some legitimately silly things about this episode that are just fun to make fun of.
Yeah.
So for the joy that it brings the Star Trek universe now, I wouldn't want to get rid of this episode.
No, it's, and I think, you know, if, okay, let's say Sub Rosa was going to be an episode of one of the newer Star Treks, like Strange New Worlds or Discovery. I'll leave out Lower Decks because it would have been played for laughs. But let's say, you know, it was played straight like it was in 1994 and stuff. I just feel like so many people would be screaming, this isn't Trek, and oh, I hate it, and yada yada. So I'm really glad the internet was I think still just a military op in 1994. Like HTML was slow moving, and it was just like you'd hear dubstep when the modem would go, and it would take forever for it to load and whatnot, that we didn't have the online forums for people to just flame about what are just frankly incredibly silly episodes played straight for you know 45 minutes. I think this episode would have gotten a much worse treatment had it have come out now. But yeah, it's what 31 years old, so it is what it is. And I would highly recommend, you know, if you ever want to watch Star Trek with a friend and joke watch an episode and do a little bit of Mystery Science Theater 3000 where you make funny snips and snide comments all the way through. Gates McFadden 100% has fun with this. And I think that's the other part is instead of choosing to be embarrassed, you roll with it, you flip it and reverse it and say, yeah, it was a goofy episode and I got to play a goofy plot and I got paid for it, so what do you have to say to me? kind of thing, right?
No, absolutely. So I think that's three each we've done now, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do we want to do what the Incomparable podcast would call a bring out your dead round, where we just kind of list off the rest that we have?
Sure.
Well, I'll quickly run through the rest of mine. So this is all chronological order, pretty much as far as when the episode came out. So TNG, Shades of Grey, the clip episode. I will say the parts of the episode that are original written and not clips, Riker has a pretty good joke when he's on the bio bed talking about how the Rikers are tough. And it's an old story. It's not even original. He said the Rikers are tough. And one time his grandfather got bitten by a snake. And after days of pain and just horrible symptoms, the snake finally died. So that was a funny joke. I laughed at that. It's an old chestnut. It's not even original to Star Trek, but the delivery was great.
Frakes is good at delivery.
Absolutely. The Voyager episode Fury, which is one of my least favorite episodes of Star Trek ever. The episode in season 6 where Kes returns and she's a horrible villain until at the end they remind her that she's supposed to be nice and she's like, oh, okay, and flies away. Terrible episode. The visual effects of Voyager battling the Vidians in the Nebula was pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah.
That's about all I can say about that.
Yeah, sure.
Enterprise. These are the Voyages, the final episode.
That was one of mine.
Yeah, there's not a lot to love about this episode either. It's the final episode. It's even the cast of Enterprise felt that it was a bit of an FU to them, and like we're gonna focus on the next generation and all of this stuff. I will say the montage at the end of all the Enterprises and the, you know, when they're going to sign the treaty that leads to the Federation. And you get, you know, the TNG Enterprise with Picard's voiceover and then Kirk's voiceover and then Archer as the Enterprise flies off. That was a nice ending to the series. That little bit.
I never really hated that episode. Is that what I was going to say? Is like people like bark at it and I'm like, it was fine.
Yeah.
It was what it had to be. The series was getting canceled. What do you expect?
Yeah. I just, there's a lot, like, I hate the killing off of Trip, I think was, I don't know. I didn't like it. I didn't like that season 4, we had this gradual, and I really like the Trip to Paul relationship. And we had this gradual them coming together over the course of season 4. And then in this final episode, we find out 10 years later that like, oh, it just fizzled out and they drifted apart. Yeah, man, come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all my little niggles. And then finally, my last one, Star Trek Into Darkness. I don't know. The little models on Admiral Marcus's desk were kind of cool. Yeah. That one, I wrote this out and I racked my brain for an hour trying to think of something that like I liked enough to talk about.
Yeah.
The visual effects are good as always. Yeah. And I was like, I really like those models on his desk. Those were neat.
Yeah.
That's damning with faint praise. I'm sorry. I totally subverted the exercise here.
No, I can't say Into Darkness is a favorite of mine either. I feel like it did everything wrong that 2009 did right is maybe a quick way of saying that one. I didn't mind some of the special effects. That's about it.
Yeah.
It was otherwise not too bad. I guess it's a movie.
Yeah.
So I had These Are the Voyages as well. A lot of what you had to say, I echo. And then my final take on that was just simply, I didn't hate this as much as a lot of other people hated it, mainly because I was watching it already angry that Enterprise was being canceled, and I felt like they did what they had to do. And yeah, there was a little bit of, if we can't have Trip, no one can, is sort of my feel on that one. Which is kind of, again, kind of a crappy death in a lot of ways. But again, he dies saving his friends.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's very, very selfless. And he gets the last word.
I guess it wasn't like, for me, it was like he wasn't wanting to leave the show or anything like that. It was just, we got to do something shocking for the final episode.
And yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Ultimately, it was nice to see Frakes and Sirtis in their uniforms again, too.
Yeah, that's true. I will also say that like the way the episode is done so that we see Trip die and all of that, and then we get the final scene with him talking to Riker because they hadn't had that conversation yet. That scene is lovely. That conversation between Trip and Riker in the galley is a lovely scene. It's a really good scene. Elevated by Jonathan Frakes, but carried by just the charm that is Connor Trinneer as Trip Tucker. I love that character. He really became one of my favorite characters in Enterprise, which I wasn't expecting because I wasn't expecting to like this good old boy Southern engineer character. But he really charmed me. And I think that's why them killing him off just hurt so much. Read the novels. He didn't actually die.
Yeah, fair enough. Very lovable character, I have to say.
Yeah.
So yeah, These Are the Voyages was one of mine. The other one is, I had to check the episode number on this one, season 2, episode 15 of Voyager Threshold. What a weird episode. I can't say really anything else. Making transwarp flight and everything like that is a cool premise, and I know Voyager was kind of known for its abilities to kind of find new methods of travel, of course using Borg space channels by the end of it and stuff like that. Kind of harkens me to the hyperspace whatever in Star Wars. I don't know the actual term. I'd have to ask your lovely wife on that one. You know, Voyager's always kind of been about travel, right? It's all that sort of stuff. But just the weird Janeway and Paris salamander creatures mating and stuff like that. It's just, it really just gets into the weird. And it's an interesting kind of hate watch for me. I can't really say anything more about it other than, it's very weird. It's a very weird, odd episode. I don't know what Brandon Braga was thinking, to be perfectly honest. So maybe I'm not leaving this one on a good. Maybe that's why I couldn't put this one on my list. My other one is the original series, The Way to Eden.
Yep.
Season 3. With those insufferable space hippies and like the full songs they do. It is just... It's so incredibly 60s self-indulgent, and I find it completely unwatchable. I find the weird heavy-handedness around its use of kind of the Bible is really weird, and then you couple that with just sort of these like half-naked space hippies just acting completely obnoxious pretty much the entire time, and for some reason Spock wants to be their friend. I just woofta. But you know what? As a time capsule for 1960s culture and sort of its weirdness, like we think that our new kind of brain rot culture is cringy. All I gotta say is go back and watch this to find out that actually brain rot has always been a thing in Western culture. It just takes on different modes and methods, and wow, it's a toughie for me.
Crack my knuckles and jump for joy. Got a clean bill of health from Dr. McCoy. You know, one of my things with that episode isn't even with all of that stuff. It's the planet they decide is Eden is like in Romulan space.
Yeah.
And they're like, we can't cross the neutral zone. The Romulans will be on us in minutes and you know, they'll attack us and stuff. But they steal the shuttlecraft. They go to Eden. The Enterprise chases them down, finds them, gets them back out of there and leaves. And we never once see the Romulans. I was like, ooh, we're going to get a showdown with the Romulans. Nope. They just never show up.
No, even throw a space battle in there or something. But instead they broke the budget on giving everyone weird looking ears.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And the wigs and the costuming, it is just very much a time capsule of the weird hippie culture. I think Adam, I forget the actor's name, but that insane wig he's wearing that just looks like a, I hate to put it this way, maybe this is bad, it's like grandma hair. I don't know what else to say. It belongs on an older lady, but he's wearing it and playing a stick with a string.
He ends up dead on that planet after eating a piece of fruit, and Spock gets all meaningful and his name was Adam. Like, oh, okay, this is supposed to be, oh my God.
Yeah, he's some troubadour. Yeah.
Interesting thing, the actor who played him, Charles Napier, shows up in Star Trek again as the general in the Deep Space Nine episode Little Green Men.
Yes.
You want to talk about like opposite characters, like 60s hippie, 40s military general?
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Charles Napier, that was the actor's name that I was trying to, if I had picked this episode, I would have done more work on it. But yeah, the Way to Eden would have been my honorable mention that was just slightly beaten out.
No.
So, yeah.
That's fun. Well, I really enjoyed this conversation. This was good.
Me too.
It kind of, I mean, we were supposed to list all these things and say something positive. I think we reiterated a lot of the negative things too, but that's going to happen for sure.
But we're not saying it by saying like, this isn't Star Trek or Star Trek is dead or they've lost their way or anything like that. I think what we're trying to maybe impress upon the general Star Trek public is, and I would take, you know, the guys from Red Letter Media who said, you know, if you liked Section 31, good for you. I'm going to still come down and say that I think probably the reason why I liked Section 31 as a movie was because I watched it with you, Dan. It's fun to watch Star Trek with friends. And I would say take this list and have a goofy, silly episode watch with some friends and poke fun and have some fun with it and cringe and stuff. Because that is part of Star Trek, right? We do have some very cringy storylines, episodes, characters, plot points within this franchise that we love. And, you know, if you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound. There's your Inner Lights and you're the Visitors and Far Beyond the Starses. But you also have your Move Along Homes and all the rest. And if you don't like the new Star Trek, that's also fine too, but don't argue that this new Trek isn't Trek because it's maybe cringy, campy, or the storyline is whatever, because it's always sort of existed. And it's because it's a TV show and it's fun to watch and it takes place in space. So let's all enjoy that and, you know, keep that positivity because I don't know, we could just not have Star Trek and, that would suck.
Yeah. Hear, hear. and yeah, if you do decide to do this as a playlist and watch these episodes, I will not blame you or judge you whatsoever if you skip And the Children Shall Lead. That's fine.
I'll just watch the two bookends. I'll watch the Worf Pulaski bit and just leave the middle part out because
up the long ladder, yeah.
Oh, sorry, The Children Shall Lead. Yeah, that's the other one I was going to say. Sorry, for whatever reason, I was ready with that response, and I heard Up the Long Ladder when you said And the Children Shall Lead.
No, I mean, and ditto for that one too. That's fine. Yeah. Riker and Pulaski become murderers in that, as Odo says in a later episode. Killing your own clone is still murder.
Well, then we can get into some Tuvix's issues as well there, right?
Absolutely. We could also get into some for the uniform arguments there too with Sisko.
Yeah, commits a mild genocide.
yeah. I don't think anybody dies, but it's not
ethnic
good.
Cleansing. Then, you know, in that respect, he definitely makes sure that those people can't live where they do anymore. Which, you know, topically speaking, is crappy in that respect. So yeah, Star Trek wades into some weird crap sometimes, doesn't it?
Well, we'd love to hear the ways in which you enjoy the various ways that Star Trek wades into weird crap. So let us know. positivelytrek@gmail.com. Also check out the Positively Trek discussion group on Facebook. We would love to hear from you there. As always, stay positive. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.